Well, good day.
I
I
had a
hope you're having a wonderful time down there in the chill of Ontario.
Yes, well, I see you have a lovely seat on the waterfront there in Vancouver.
Well, it would be nice, except I can't afford that, so.
Well, we promised new and more exciting virtual backgrounds.
Well, that's part of our transparency, and we're working on it. So here they are.
That's right. Here we are. I'm really not down at the marina in the middle of winter, but it is.
Nor am I in downtown Vancouver.
We're trying to spiff up the place a little bit here.
Well, yes, I think going back to our last discussion, it got kind of dark and dismal, and maybe it had something to do with the background that we were using. So maybe this one will be a bit more airy and light. And
You think this will fix it?
well, I don't know about you, but I know I've certainly looked over the last week or so of good news, and I found it very elusive.
I did a little research, as I was saying earlier in our prep, that I typed in, give me some good news, and there wasn't, Google didn't give me any good news. One of the main bad news stories, I guess, but a collective pessimistic story was in the one of the national paper, the National Post in Canada, where it said, in Canada, everything seems to be getting worse. And that was on December 12th, this article.
It did come out with a very pessimistic view, and I don't know whether that's relegated just to Canada. I'm sure probably if you did the same kind of a research poll in England or Scotland or the United States or Germany, I'm sure you'd probably be getting the same kind of pessimistic views back from people, maybe with different issues, but it wasn't very much fun to read, that's for sure.
No, and the story that began with the fact that Canada is a prosperous and stable country, and it said that most people are happy to live there or here, as the case may be, but at the end of the year, they listed things that really were, as you say, quite down. What's the word I'm looking at? It brought you down.
Brought you down.
Here at the end of 2022 in Canada, they say this article went on to say that medical wait times had never been as bad as they are now. So that it takes an average of 27.4 weeks for a Canadian to secure medical treatment. 27.4 weeks. Now that's terrible. That's
Which,
outrageous.
in some ways sounds bad, but by the same token, not that I've ever experienced it myself, but I've heard, and anecdotally, I guess, is that if you need urgent health care, you're going to get it. And it goes back to a story that I was told by an instructor who kind of came into the class with a glass of scotch in one hand and a cigar in the other and started talking about this and that and next thing. And he said, "But poo-poo the healthcare system all you want." He said, "I walked into the major hospital in downtown Vancouver, St. Paul's, with my drink and my smoke. And I went to the front desk and said, I'm having a bit of a tough time with my chest and breathing." Well, he was admitted within 5 minutes, and within a couple of days, he'd had his triple bypass that he needed. So, if you need it, you're going to get it. The fact that it takes you longer time and you have to put up with so much pain, 27 weeks to get something looked at, well, that's not good.
Well,
Doctors are tired, nurses are tired. Do we have enough of them?
I was just the top headline, and in fact, the Fraser Institute, which came up with this figure of 27.4 weeks to secure medical treatment said that when they started doing this study back in 93, it was only 9.3 weeks. So, you know, the much heralded Canadian medical system is really on life support itself to a large degree.
It is. And I think part of that is the, well, the, in my opinion, a couple of things that are related to that. One is that we have a hard time getting qualified doctors, nurses, practitioners to come to Canada. Part and parcel with that is that there's an onerous process for them to go through. And if, you know, they got their medical degree from the back of a matchbook cover, they probably aren't going to qualify to be a doctor in Canada. But surely to goodness, there are qualified people in other countries that shouldn't have to jump through all the hoops to get here to start doing the work that they are trained to do. Second couple, I think it was a third or fourth point down, was that the mental health issues. Is that part and parcel of the leading to this pessimism that people are just so down and depressed that they don't, you know, it becomes like a drain where they just start to circle and circle and circle and they get down farther and farther and farther, and then it's very difficult to pick themselves up.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up. That was the second point of the list of down stories that are affecting Canada, is that most young Canadians can't even get help for their mental health issues. And this is a poll by the Canadian Institute for Mental Health found that young Canadians are struggling to secure mental health treatment, particularly among boys and young men. More than half reported being unable to access support systems. And that the mental health situation among that group goes from mild to moderate functional impairment. This is very damning. And the new revelation about limited Canadian mental health treatment arrives just as Canada is just 3 months away from legalizing assisted suicide for patients whose only underlying condition is mental illness. Now, that's almost evil in my view. Mm. Sorry. Yeah. That really is tantamount to being evil.
Well, it is because they could be could be assessed and get two practitioners on a day when they're really, really down and depressed and would agree that, yeah, this is the only way out for you. But if they had seen those same two practitioners a day later or a day earlier, they might not have gotten that. So it's like a lot of things. And it goes back to many years ago, not to relate to war stories, but we started qualifying things. You know, in Canada, we used to have, we could only charge people if they were caught smuggling 10 people or more. Well, why was it 10? You know, if you're smuggling a person, isn't that bad enough to warrant a charge? Well, what makes 10 any different than 1 or 100 or whatever? So if you need two people to confirm and you can't qualify, you can't write a law that's going to fix every situation 100% of the time. And, you know, maybe to put a bit, maybe that's a good thing that you can't. Was it Charleston Heston and Solon Green?
That brings up the question of how are Canadians, a G7 country, for 53% of the respondents to a poll said they struggle to put food on the table.
Yeah.
An even higher number, 61%, say they worry they won't be able to afford to put gas in their car. Here we are, December 2022, and These are astounding statistics.
Yes,
the one last Friday from the U.S. was that the cost of vegetables. Okay, this is not a science that is so esoteric we can't figure out what it vegetables, but the cost of vegetables is up 38%.
Well, and again, I don't know how it is in your neck of the woods, but I don't notice too many electric tractors or gas-driven tractors doing farm work. It's all diesel.
I know. Let's not go there.
The things get moved from the farm to the factories and from the factories to the grocery shelves. It's all done primarily by diesel fuel, which, at least in this neck of the woods, is probably 60 cents more a liter than gasoline is.
Sure.
So that's part and parcel, part of the problem with the high cost of groceries, but not all of it.
And I think we reflect a global movement to where people can't even afford home ownership, much less fuel for their cars.
Yeah.
One third of Canadians are effectively shut out of home ownership. Mm-hmm. They're simply not going to be able to buy a house because they can't earn enough money to make a down payment to put down on a house.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for the first time in a long time, nearly a quarter of Canadians say they need charitable support to make ends meet. So food banks, for example, have a record high number of folks visiting it, up 35% compared to last year.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the same story we get from our neighbors to the south. Never mind that the other social ills of North America, homelessness and addiction, have really skyrocketed in the last 5 years. And then there's a story that I think is also very relevant to our times, is that a lot of folks are breaking faith with high immigration and are really questioning whether it's time to be admitting into Canada, for example, 500,000 immigrants annually. Like, where are they going to live? What are they going to do? And this has nothing to do with xenophobia or anti-immigration sentiment, right? Because Canada is the most pro-immigrant country on the planet, always has been. But, you know, there's a fear that where are you going to put these people? We can't build houses for the folks that are here already. The food banks are being run over, and the ideologues who are essentially on the side of let's not change the system. This model worked for 20 years. Well, it's not working now. Okay, and you can't keep adding more water to the glass before it overflows. To use an analogy, that's what they're doing here, and the fact that there's a question by just regular folks: can we really do this?
Yeah, and I think a fear. I don't think it's a fear or a xenophobia. I think it's a concern, because we do see that the average individual in this country is hard pressed to be able to do this themselves. So why would we bring people over to, are we trying to intentionally set people up for failure? I don't know. It sure looks like it.
Well, it's that combined with clearly a economy that is struggling globally, not just in Canada.
Yeah.
We focused on this beginning of the show on Canada because, we went looking for good news, and the only good news is, well, there's not too much more bad news. But it's it's questionable whether the end result will be something we're all going to be very happy with. I think 2023 is going to be a tough year.
I think it'll start off that way, yeah. But I think, as I said to you before, we can't be the only generation, nor the people that are following us be the only generations that have faced fears of what's happening and what's going on and how is it ever going to be fixed. And we always manage somehow to have a few individuals that step up and fix things or do things differently and steer a course away from the abyss, and off we go again to find another abyss. You know, it's just, it seems to be a bit cyclical in my mind, the way things go, but it always seems to kind of work out.
Well, you know, it's in our sort of community, we've always tried to be generous with the issue of refugees and even economic migrants who don't necessarily meet sort of the criteria that has been developed by the legislators. And when you see the high numbers of approvals of people who have come through the back door for years, not just this year, but for years, it's a society that has proven, particularly in North America, to be welcoming of migrants. But I think the milk of human kindness at the moment is beginning to sour, because there's just the numbers are overwhelming. When you look at what's happening in the U.S., it's beyond any rational concept.
It's like a lot of things, you know, in the businesses that you and I have worked in the past. By and large, people really didn't care. I mean, they had an opinion. They might have joshed or they might have kidded with you. But until it actually affected them because they couldn't get their relative from country X to Canada in a timely manner, it was kind of an esoteric argument. We need immigration. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's wonderful. Yeah, that's fine. But until it actually comes and affects the individual on a case, then it becomes a little more real to them then, I guess. And
sure. Well, in fact, segue into what is the next item here on violent crime becoming commonplace in Sweden, for example, one of the famously placid places on the planet, where violent and horrific acts of violence are becoming all too familiar. And since 2018, the Swedes have recorded 500 bombings, while they describe gang shootings have become increasingly common. I mean, 500 bombings. The police have recorded 124 homicides in 2020, and they found out that they've had over 100 police officers seriously injured.
Wow.
And then the crime spike they're looking at, when they do the analysis, suddenly they discover, well, oops, vast majority of those who are involved are directly tied to immigration and drug trafficking. And that the pathologies of these violent crimes and mass shootings are not done by your indigenous Swedish population, you know, to put it in a more
blunt terms,
demographic term. And it says Sweden's large illegal influx of newcomers ranged from 130,000 a year in 2012 to 2019, before they suddenly decided back in 2020 that, whoa, we can't do this. Now, Sweden's a very small country compared to Canada or the United States.
Yeah.
The U.S. is well over 2.5 million now, who have just increased the size of the population from outside. And, you know, the issue of gang violence, the correlation between the homicide rate and the percentage of population of foreign citizens is almost on the same bell curve. So you're going, whoa, there's something strange going on here. And it isn't. It's, you know, you have to be able to discuss this. You have to have an open mind on this. This is, you know, not something that is indigenous to Sweden. It's also happening in other.
Yeah, I would think it would be. Well, and I think too, it goes back down to these people lashing out because they came to the land of milk and honey, and you know, found out that the milk is sour and there are no bees, and the road actually isn't paved with gold. You know, I can see that being upsetting for a lot of people. if that's what they've
Well,
been thinking.
and you know, there's bells being rung by a lot of folks with extensive backgrounds in this. We're not talking about armchair critics who are anti-immigration. We're talking about people like the head of the French Secret Service, the former head of the French Secret Service, who just last week said that uncontrolled mass migration is the only issue facing the country that actually threatens civil peace. This guy's called Pierre Brochand. He's a former director of the General Directorate for External Security between 2000 and 2000, 2002 and 2008. And he says that mass migration has produced, I quote this, a cross-cutting impact on all of our collective life, which I consider to be generally negative, unquote. He said that immigration in and of itself was not evil, but noted that the very particular immigration that's been subjected, that France has been subjected to for the past 50 years has caused a creeping third worldization of French society, as well as a regression in key areas such as education, productivity, public service, safety, and civility. Wow. When you look at the history of France, which has always been very big on welcoming refugees for
Well, that also
decades.
moves to Germany. Wasn't there an attempted coup there? I read
Well,
somewhere.
I think that was a little weird from former royalists. When was the last king of Germany? I mean, these, yeah, that was, I think that's a kind of a bizarre, movement for, a German monarchist to try to suddenly overthrow.
Yeah, but it kind of goes into the same situation. Germany has been very, very open-armed and welcoming of refugees, and is this a unintended side consequence of this that you're getting the old monarchist starting to stand? I don't know. It's a
Well,
strange thing.
it very much so. And of course, there's news also from, again, Europe, where the Europeans revealed a plan to crack down on irregular migration through the Western Balkans by deploying border agents to countries in the region, as well as encouraging governments to end free travel arrangements with source countries. So suddenly they've come up with a brilliant new idea, that is to put European this Frontex group to put European border guards into source countries to stop the surge of illegals. Now this is very interesting because it's kind of an expansion of the European border management system to something that you and I may remember. Canada tried this quite successfully from it without a halt, not exactly sending our officers abroad to stand at the border of countries, but we did send officers to various source countries to screen prospective immigrants. And but the Europeans have decided that they're going to look at sending literally hundreds of border guards from the various European Union countries and have a presence on the ground to exploit to the maximum potential a new mandate for Frontex. Now, Frontex now begins to look like kind of the foreign legion of the border service of the European Union. So they've made deals with enlist Albania, Montenegro, Serbia, North Macedonia, which will allow these agents called Frontex agents to take part in joint operations in the region. And they're looking at a similar thing in Bosnia and Herzegovina. So they're basically looking at the Western Balkans to export their law enforcement capacity.
Well, it also brings up the issues of the Chinese secret police operating in various countries around the world, and Is that what this is going to be?
Well, you know, it's interesting that we are having this movement of law enforcement across international boundaries. And, you know, the extension of the European Union law enforcement into the Balkans is probably like the extension of NATO into other countries. You know, it's fascinating how we have a lot of cross currents here of different sovereign nations in impacting on the local activities in other sovereign nations, particularly when it comes to managing migration. Yet, at the end of the day, it doesn't seem to have a great deal of effectiveness.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure. The secret police, though, around the world, of the Chinese secret police, that's a very interesting story, because I don't think that there's a somewhere in Vancouver is there a station with the PPC coat of arms on the door saying come here and talk to your friendly Chinese policeman who is posted in Vancouver.
Well, I haven't looked for one, and I'm certainly not about to go and start now either. But
the report that I saw says that they are in 53 countries, and they're based in the U.S. and two in New York, one in Los Angeles, and one set up somewhere else at an undisclosed location. Now, the same story was published in various media sources in Canada, where they said in Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, these Chinese authorities were carrying out policing activities. Like, what are you talking about? Within the Chinese community? I would assume. Are they being actively suppressed or monitored by the intelligence community of Canada or the US or the UK, where these so-called police operations are in place?
Yeah, I don't know. I have no.
What do you mean you don't know? I mean, you haven't gone downtown?
Well, you know, I don't have to get on the bus and go down there to work anymore. So it's one of the last places that I tend to go. But it also, I guess, just this whole issue of policing and guns, etc. You had mentioned that we had received a comment back from one of our previous broadcasts.
Yeah. One of our viewers was commenting on your issue with the U.S. Second Amendment, or rather, you touched on it. I think it was the last broadcast. I sent you the what he said. You got it right.
Yeah, it's in the other program there.
Okay, well, let me see if I can pull it up here. It was actually very interesting that someone took the time to address
what we have as perhaps
ignorance of the law. Basically, and I'll pull it up here on my screen here. You know, sometimes we have the best technology and then we can't find it. So the comment was about the Second Amendment and what was your initial discussion. It said, Tom, this is from Steve from Texas. He says, here's a couple of statements for Bob from our founders regarding America's right to bear arms. I think that's the discussion that you were alluding to at the time. He says, look what happened to Australia when they turned in all their weapons, major COVID lockdowns, and even Chinese flags flying in government buildings. And he's a Texan, obviously. He says the people in Texas have 10 guns for every household, which is a reason why the Second Amendment is so strongly, I guess, maintained by virtue of that fact in Texas. And the other part was that he quoted Thomas Jefferson that no free man shall ever be debarred the use of arms. The strongest reason for people to retain their right to keep and bear arms is at last resort to protect themselves against tyranny and government. Of course, the idea that Americans might have to fight in their own streets against their own government strikes us today as absurd and impossible. And that's because we are victims of a common enough human fallacy that the belief if something has never happened before, it never will. Such optimism is unjustified by history. He says the Chinese students didn't think their own army would fire on them. So he's talking about Tiananmen Square. So that's an interesting sort of view on the Second Amendment,
mm-hmm.
and what the potential for its dismemberment might be by those who see that it's strictly a gun issue and not a legal issue.
Yeah. Well, I guess it kind of reinforces what I guess I was maybe not putting forward in a very straightforward, clear manner, but it certainly sounds like it was put in there as a check and a balance against the governments. If I'm reading what Steve is saying, I think it's, or at least what I think,
well,
Steve is putting up.
But, I guess, and he, you know, the Jeffersonian quote is about how in revolutionary times, the King of England at the time wasn't going to be able to keep the American Revolution from essentially finishing its job of becoming the catalyst for an independent United States of America. So that's part of the argument that, you know, you a government whose people are unarmed are basically easy to control, or rather, they have no defense if you have a dictatorial or autocratic government take over. This is a very interesting at some point existential question for particularly Americans who see only black and white on the issue of guns in the Second Amendment. But, you know, you have to admit that, you know, it's a country of contradictions when it comes to the issue of this of the Second Amendment, even the First Amendment, which of course is freedom of
mm-hmm.
speech.
Well, I guess that also ties a little bit in with our current legislation in Canada. So many guns trying to be banned. Is this a
Yeah. Well, it's to me, it's a sledgehammer coming down on the ant, because the gun issue in this country is nothing like the gun issue to the South. They're totally, so the history is different, the culture is different, and yes, there are gangbangers with guns in the urban centers, but they're not because of guns that are being bought and sold in Canada. These are smuggled into the country.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody knows that, and it's really hypocrisy on the part, I'm sorry, of the legislators in Ottawa to talk about, oh, that's how we're going to solve the gangbanger trouble. It's a joke, but that's for another broadcast.
It is, yes.
Anyway, we're down to our last 2 minutes or so. So, I guess our next broadcast would be just before Christmas. And
yes,
maybe we can find some good news by then.
Well, if the last week is any indication,
Doesn't look
I won't
good.
be holding my breath, but yeah. Well, I guess the season for hopefully goodwill and kindness and.
Well, I think we still have a pretty good reservoir of that. It's just some days we become hostages to the mainstream media's desire to titillate and to make money. We get caught up in it. But I think by and large, it's still a pretty good place. We just have
I certainly wouldn't want to be on a ship going to the moon or Mars, because that's
you
a
know,
total.
I'm not I'm in a big hurry to go to North Korea. I don't, you know, I don't see any real reason to go there.
No. Although if we go to South Korea, aren't we going to lose 2 years? Wasn't that in the news the other day? They threatened
yes.
the laws, yeah. I could go back and be younger. I could find new faces.
You know, that could segue into something else, and then we couldn't put this on to YouTube.
We don't have enough time for that, but I could go back and find new ways to screw things up.
All right, Bob, listen, you have a good week.
And you
I'll
too.
Talk to you soon, and keep the faith.
And you have fun too.
Will do.